98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Weekly Blast.
The RPO, or run pass option, was born on high school playgrounds. It took college football by storm. It peaked in the Super Bowl when Nick Foles and the Eagles ambushed, of all people, Bill Belichick and the Patriots. 3 years later, it's also an offense you run at your own risk. And obviously, this is an issue in Arizona, where the Cardinals are not only sticking with the wrong general manager and the wrong head coach, they might be running the wrong offense. Because in 2020, the playoffs and others seem to confirm that the play action is really the only sustainable way of running an offense. You run the football and you take your shots downfield. The best quarterbacks perfect that art, from Tom Brady to Aaron Rodgers, while the most athletic can incorporate bootlegs, which are practically unstoppable. Now, RPOs might seem flashy, but really, they're pretty stupid. They're based on the quarterback reading the eyes and actions of one specific defender, and that means the defense is always dictating to you. And over time, smart defensive coordinators, they're going to learn how to exploit that. But now, the Cardinals show zero signs of concerns. They turned up their nose at hiring an offensive coordinator for Cliff Kingsbury, instead promoting Sean Coogler. So here we go, with an offense where Kyler Murray finished the season as the 11th best quarterback in football per rankings, where the offense pretty much revolved around his 32 runs of 10 or more yards, which tied Murray with Lamar Jackson. But these same Cardinals graded out number 25 among 32 teams by Pro Football Focus, and unfortunately that also feels right, and I fear it's going to lead to a lot of I told you so's down the road. All right, today's lengthy Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. Test drive the ultimate driving machine at Chapman BMW in Chandler, at Chapman BMW on Camelback. You can find them online at chapmanbmw.com. Oh, sometimes I just have a lot to say. And today I think I've got a big weighty subject here I want to kind of get into. And it's kind of funny because unbeknownst to me, well, let me back up and say this. At the time when RPOs came into the league, like the Wildcat and like any other kind of gimmicky kind of offense, it was like, whoa, this is really hard to defend.
Mm-hmm.
If you put the quarterback and a running back in the backfield and the quarterback in shotgun and the quarterback takes a snap and he puts the ball in the chest of the running back and it may come out, it may not, how in the world are you going to defend that? Well, when you look at the success of RPOs now and where it's all going, there's a lot of people who will tell you that this little relationship between the defender that a quarterback like Kyler Murray has to key on and what defenses are doing now to confuse the quarterback in that read, it's pretty clear to me that RPOs as an art form are going bye-bye. And so, once again, what I'm trying to say here is the Arizona Cardinals are, in my opinion, they're a rudderless ship right now because I don't think they can tell you what kind of offense they plan on running in 2021. Because they hired a guy from an air raid system, brought him in, and then tweak, brought in this pro element, that pro element, this pro element. What are you calling now? What is the identity of this team? Where does the head coach go when he needs to call four plays in a row that he knows are going to work?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, when you get a car and then you slap all the aftermarket stuff on it and the original car's not even recognizable anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's a lot of aftermarket stuff on this offense right now. And I pulled up the numbers on RPO and play action, and yeah, I would like to see more play action. I was actually surprised to see the Cardinals where they are in terms of play action pass attempts this year. Kind of middle of the road, 130. The team that runs the most play action, not a surprise, the Los Angeles Rams, 194 play action passes. In terms of RPO, total plays, Cardinals were second in the league, 176 RPOs behind only Baltimore. They ran the ball in pass attempts. They were number one on RPOs, 124 for under 10 yards a pop, and then they ran the ball 52 times on RPOs for 327 yards. So they're at the top of the list, or near the top of the list on RPOs, and I It didn't look all that effective, especially in the second half of the season.
Okay, first of all, you're amazing, because when I got the idea for this, I did a little research on this and found nothing, and you found exactly what I was looking for in 5 seconds. Where did you find that information on how many RPOs they ran?
Profootballreference.com.
Okay.
Some advanced numbers.
That's quality information there, and it really does speak to what the Cardinals are going to be going forward. They need to get their quarterback under center. And to get them out of the pocket, you do it in the form of bootlegs. That, to me, is going to be the most effective way to operate this offense. They dabbled in getting Kyler Murray under center at the end of last year. They need to make this a focal point of their offense because, again, you look at Tom Brady and the way he sells play action fakes. You can tell that he has worked and worked and worked on that technique. Same with Aaron Rodgers. You mentioned the Rams. They do a ton of it. It's really, honestly, I've been watching play action in the NFL since I was a kid. That offense has not gone out of style. Every other gimmick offense, wildcat, wishbone, option, triple option, RPOs.
Run and shoot.
Run and shoot. They come and go.
This is pretty interesting, too, Bick, using Tampa Bay as the baseline. According to these numbers I'm looking at, the Cardinals actually threw 18 more play-action passes, 130 to 112, than Tampa Bay did. But Tampa Bay had far more yards on those play-action passes.
Wow.
So that becomes philosophical. In addition to what you're saying about the design or what offense you're running, the philosophy of where you're throwing the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And the balls, I mean, that was a complaint many times after Cardinal games, especially in 2020. Why is the ball not going down the field a little bit more?
Bruce Arians uses the run game and then the play action to set up big plays down the field. He'll run the ball for 2 yards two times in a row so that he could play action mm-hmm. and throw it for 40 yards. It feels like if the Cardinals play action, they still throw a 5-yard pass.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, and again, it's I think Bill Barnwell used the terms Arizona's offense in 2020 was really nothing more than Kyler Murray making magic by himself or with DeAndre Hopkins.
But also talked about what he felt was a lack of real speed on the offense.
You know, on the offensive side, we saw it in week 16 and week 17, right? You know, this was an offense that didn't have a lot of speed. Andy Isabella, the guy they drafted, you know, ahead of DK Metcalf to be their speed guy, ahead of Terry McLaurin, you know, but either they don't trust him or he's not very good. And it might be both, but he wasn't part of the lineup. It was really just Keyshawn Johnson as the guy who was kind of the downfield threat. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald in his career, I mean, I don't want to disparage a legend, but not exactly a speed guy at this point. DeAndre Hopkins, you know, more of a physical receiver than a speed guy. Christian Kirk has not been that sort of a difference maker on a regular basis. We know what he can do on a, you know, here and there.
And then even moving further out, and this was maybe more damning about the Cardinals from Bill Barnwell's standpoint, is what's your long-term plan?
A lot of the moves the Cardinals made this year were short-term solutions to kind of plug up holes and didn't always work all that well. You know, signing guys like Devondre Campbell, where you have him signed to a one-year deal, but to create cap space to get him on the roster, you have to give him, you know, 3 voidable years at the end of the contract to put $4 million dead money into the future. That's just not running a business well. And from the Steve Kime side, I just think that, you know, they were struggling to find competent players in those positions because he has drafted poorly. And then, you know, a lot of those guys aren't coming back, and it's going to be tough with the reduced cap to get those deals done again in 2021. They're going to have to rely on a lot of young players who, you know, they weren't really trusting for most this season. And then I think, you know, pretty significant changes have to be made. And I think it's more a long-term thing than a short-term thing. I feel like they're sort of trying to find these quick solutions to try and solve their problems, but they're not actually resolving the bigger issues at hand. And, you know, it doesn't feel like things are going to change all that much heading into 2021.
Yeah, that's the disturbing part. And that was in context of Bill Barnwell's piece that he wrote a few days ago projecting the playoff field for 2021, mm-hmm. you know, 7 in each conference if they stick to the expanded playoffs. Cardinals were not part of that party. And we spent a lot of time over the past few weeks kind of, you know, looking into the future of what the NFC West will appear to be. Those teams are not going away. And you have an opportunity for 2 of those teams potentially to upgrade at the quarterback position.
Yeah.
It is a tough, tough neighborhood to play in.
Oh, it really, really is. And you're stuck as a Cardinals fan hoping that Kyler Murray takes a quantum leap next year and hoping that the 49ers and Rams don't get their hands on impact quarterbacks. And that's a best-case scenario. And because, once again, you look at what has gone down here, okay? The addition of Cliff Kingsbury came at a time when the Cardinals were not able to find a quarterback for this football team post Carson Palmer.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in Josh Rosen, who just looked flat and just lacking everything under 1 year of Cliff Wilkes. They brought in Cliff Kingsbury to try to get the offense out of the gutter or the cellar and to get Josh Rosen right. And that is what he sold Michael Bidwill. Was a plan to renovate Josh Rosen based on his air raid offense and all that kind of stuff. When you look at what's gone down here, the evolution, Sean Coogler's input, Sean Coogler was one of the first ones to kind of get Cliff out of the five wide receiver sets, the 10 personnel, out of that and into running sets, double tight ends, power football, traditional stuff. And it worked. Sean Coogler now has been promoted to running game coordinator in addition to offensive line head coach. That promotion is a code for he's the guy that's going to help build this offense with Cliff Kingsbury. But once again, you've got an air raid guy who had never coached in the NFL, who was a low ceiling head coach in college, and now you're going to ask him to create an NFL. It just doesn't make any sense. None of it makes any sense. Because if Cliff Kingsbury was versed in this stuff, he would have run this stuff elsewhere. Maybe he's smart enough to completely reinvent himself. But this is what we're asking now of this guy. Because I can tell you 3 to 4 facets of the Cliff Kingsbury playbook I never want to see again. The RPOs are one of them. Okay, after doing a lot of reading on this, I think it's a dead-end road. I think you're chasing your tail with this nonsense. The quick bubble screens to wide receivers, don't ever want to see them again.
I wouldn't completely eliminate them. It just seems like they're so poorly blocked most of the time, or so poorly conceived most of the time.
Okay.
You know, I can watch football on any given weekend in the NFL and see teams have success with a bubble screen.
Okay.
Because it's blocked.
All right,
well,
then do them better. How about that?
All right, what else do you want to cut out of the offense?
The dinking and the dunking. I want to see downfield. I want to see stretching a team vertically.
And
I want to see more than one running back. I want to see a running back by committee. Fresh legs, churn and burn, baby.
I'm going to ask the question that's going to make Ron Wolfley very happy. Starting to see fullbacks coming back into the NFL. New Orleans uses a fullback. Uh-huh. San Francisco uses a fullback. I would love to see, and we had this discussion very briefly when talking about Mel Kiper Jr.'s mock draft that came out. The Cardinals, for years, have missed the boat on having a devastating tight end. I mean, they're available. You can find these guys. Most teams have a very adept pass-catching tight end, and Dan Arnold actually represented an improvement in that area, and he still wasn't that great. I don't know how that jives into Cliff Kingsbury's offense. I know early in his tenure at Texas Tech, he had a record-setting tight end in Jason Morrow. I know this because he caught about 38 passes in a bowl game against ASU.
Yeah.
That's something that I think could be missing. But, you know, you brought up the term reinvention. Can Cliff Kingsbury completely reinvent himself? I'm not going to eliminate the possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll come really close to eliminating the possibility of reinventing himself in Arizona.
Okay.
Because you're going into year 3 now, and we both see it, and I think a lot of people see it. If this is not a playoff team next year, are you going to take the opportunity to reinvent yourself when the clock is ticking and your safety net is disappearing?
Of course not.
No.
Yeah. This is.
The other thing. If you ask Cliff to completely reinvent himself, then why do you have Cliff?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, then let me ask you, why do you have Cliff?
What? That was the old switcheroo. Not ready to answer.
When
that.
We did those shows after that hiring was made, and admittedly, we were Yeah, we were so shell-shocked from what we had just seen in 2018. Anything that was different seemed to be good.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea.
But I did, too. I signed, you know, I signed up for it.
Mm-hmm, me, too.
Let's see what this looks like.
I just don't like it anymore, and I don't think it's going to get profoundly better. I hope I'm wrong. Man, do I hope I'm wrong.
But you also talked about post-Bruce Arians moving on. Josh Rosen, he was what he was in Arizona. I don't think there was many quarterbacks alive that could have succeeded in that particular offense under that coordinator. But speaking of Bruce Arians, the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, was on with Doug and Wolf this morning. One of the questions that came up, would he still have been the Cardinals head coach the Cardinals had been able to get Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson in the draft?
Are you still the head coach of the Cardinals if those 30 seconds didn't happen and you have one of those guys?
You know, that's hard to say. It's so much dependent on my health. And those guys might have made it a little bit easier.
There is a correlation. Health of a head coach and who's playing quarterback for them.
Right. Who's playing quarterback and are you letting me keep my coaching staff intact? Yeah, there was a lot of issues that just kind of made this, all right, you know what, now is a good time.
Now, before he asked that question, BA did get into it, and the whole thing that went down in that draft on the Cardinals getting jumped before they could get Mahomes or Watson.
You know, it was kind of crazy. That day, it's very, very vivid. You know, we're sitting there, and we got him. We got one of the two. We're either going to get Patrick or we're going to get Deshaun, because neither one of these teams need a quarterback. Then Kansas City trades up, and we go, they're not taking a quarterback. They got Alex Smith, and there goes Pat. Then Houston trades up, and they take Deshaun, and it's like, wow, those 30-some seconds that those things happen in were amazing to change a lot of things for a lot of franchises.
It is sad again.
And we'll never
know
the answer.
Isn't that so Cardinal-like?
Yeah,
in that regard,
yeah,
you're sitting there and other teams jump you and you...
And then you look down and you literally have a bag in your hands that you're holding.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think I know what the response would have been from the Cardinal fan base had Patrick Mahomes been the guy for the Cardinals. They probably, a lot of the same things that were said about Cliff Kingsbury probably would have been said. Oh, come on, really? Yeah, he could throw the ball. He's got a strong arm, and he put up huge numbers in a gimmicky offense.
Well,
but how does that translate to the NFL? And what would he have become without the connection to Andy Reid?
The Cardinals don't move up to get Josh Rosen had they not been lapped by the Chiefs and the Texans in that year.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was something that you would have hoped that once one team you weren't expecting to get Patrick Mahomes, if you really wanted Deshaun Watson, that you would have made a move to be that team to move up as well. But that's water under the bridge. They've got Kyler Murray now. The kid has got a high ceiling. He's got a lot of question marks. It's going to be fun to watch and monitor his development. I'm just really averse to just wasting a year to kind of realize midway through next year, hey, you know what? We need to rebuild this thing. Oh, no kidding.
Well, going back to what you said about the, and I know you did a lot of reading on the RPO thing, but do you have pause when you look at the future? And let's say the Cardinals are on the same wavelength as you, and they're, mm-hmm. Maybe the RPO was not the way to go. How much pause do you have that in a more traditional pocket passing offense, Kyler Murray can be that guy?
I don't know about that. I don't know about that immediately. I do think you need to get him out of the pocket, but I think the best way to do that is bootlegging it. I think you kill all the proverbial whatever it is with one stone. You just do, because you get him under center, you can effectively play action, and that is timeless. So if you want to be able to do both and have balance, that is a great way to go. And then you spin bootlegs off of that, naked bootlegs off of that. They can be very, very damaging to a defense. I think Kyler Murray would be sensational at it.
You could also just call run plays for him. It doesn't need to be an RPO.
Yeah,
just because they hike the ball and it's a run play.
Or just do what other teams have historically done. Send everybody deep, have them kill time in the pocket, and take off. Yeah, there's a lot of ways to go about it. The I think it was pretty obvious. Part of the reason why I have been so hyperbolic about those last two games is the psychological mechanics that went into that series of play calling against the Rams was emblematic of a guy that did not know what to call, whose head was spinning so much and had so little command over what was going to work and what my quarterback can do for me that I just give up. Here, punt. And you can't have that, but that's where we're at now.
Yeah,
and,
but I think there's a lot of – we've seen similar things, and I brought this up on the Matt LaFleur example. When they had a first and goal at the 8-yard line, you have to know what your end game is there.
Mm-hmm.
Worst-case scenario, if it's fourth and goal at the 8, what are we doing? And call plays accordingly. And I think that kind of popped up in that sequence in a more extreme way. I mean, the Cardinals, had a much more dire down and distance situation. But again, if you're going to, I mean, that didn't make any sense not to try to attack some of the remaining yardage you needed to gain for a first down.
No,
with a more traditional play that was mm-hmm. more suited to the health of your quarterback at that time.
It didn't make any sense.
It was very frustrating.
What else did BA have to say?
Along your lines, talking about the future of the quarterback, and this is the Quarterback Whisperer, right? That's the name of BA's book.
Mm-hmm.
Duggan Wolf asked him, are we seeing the end of the pocket passer era?
It starts with being able to play from the pocket. Now, if you have the ability to move around, like Aaron Rodgers moves around as good as anybody and creates plays. But if you can't play from the pocket, you can run around all the hell you want. You ain't going to make any plays. You got to be able to play from the pocket.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Now, the statuesque, immobile pocket passer, you'll still see some of those guys if they're tremendous quarterback, tremendous throwers of the football. But
Bruce Arians has one right now.
Yeah, he does.
Oh, yeah.
But It will always be about pocket passing, regardless of what your skill set is at quarterback. To be successful, you're going to have to throw from the pocket, and that's one of the questions I have about Kyler Murray.
Yeah, and
we've seen it in doses, but not consistently.
And I do not think for a minute it has anything to do with throwing of arm strength or throwing accuracy. I think it's just his feet, his technique, and his comfort level, and keeping his eyes downfield. To be a good pocket passer, you've got to go through your reads. You can't see, D-Hop's covered. I'm going to go into panic mode now. That's not a pocket passer.
Yeah, and speaking of his current quarterback, Tom Brady, BA kind of compared the old school with Brady and the new school with Mahomes in this Super Bowl matchup.
Well, I think it's a blending because Patrick Mahomes is one of the most talented guys I've ever gone and worked out in person. And he can play in any offense there is. But he will kill you from the pocket, and he will murder you from outside the pocket, which if you let him out of there. So he is the blend of the best of mobile people, but he will light you up from the pocket because his arm is just unbelievable.
Yeah, and I guess that's a big ingredient, too, when mm-hmm. you got an arm like that.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, this whole discussion has had me thinking about what would have happened if the Cardinals would have got lucky with one of those guys.
Man, what a move by the Chiefs to move up and take the right guy. I mean, there's really not a wrong choice.
And then
there.
Sit him for a year.
Wow. Chiefs, you know what's ironic? To bring this full circle, before the Chiefs, even the year that he sat and watched Alex Smith, you know what the Chiefs were running? RPOs. They don't do it anymore.
Mm.
Yeah. I read too much on the topic last night.
You want to get together after the show and make some signs?
The only time they run it is the play where Patrick Mahomes got hurt a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was more of a sprint option. But
those kind of moves do change the entire course, not only of a franchise's trajectory, they change the course of history.
Yep. BA joined the morning show with Doug and Wolf. You can catch that on ArizonaSports.com or subscribe to the Doug and Wolf podcast and just have it waiting for you. But we'll also talk to another member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and a former Arizona Cardinal, A.Q. Shipley, joining us next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Tuesday edition of Bickley and Murata here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Tampa Bay Buccaneers getting ready for the Super Bowl. 2 weeks from Sunday against the Kansas City Chiefs and from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Longtime Arizona Cardinal A.Q. Shipley joins us now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. A.Q., thanks for the time. Congratulations, man.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on.
Now, we were all bummed here in Arizona when we got the news of your neck injury and B.A.'s quote about you not playing anymore and just immediately joining the coaching staff. But from a health standpoint, how are you doing right now?
I'm doing well. Yeah, no, I mean, it was a tough little deal. I mean, it was one of those things, a little freak thing, and I've probably been hit with my head in that same position, I mean, 100,000 times. And for whatever reason on that time, it just kind of sent me numb kind of the whole way down, and feeling came back. I mean, I still got some nerve stuff a little bit, but for the most part, I mean, I can walk and live a normal life and kind of do that, so I'm grateful for that.
Well, that's good. And, but you obviously still bring a lot to the table wherever you're at. Tell me a little bit about, though, the vibe that this must be for the Buccaneers in year one of Tom Brady. I can only imagine the kind of energy that surrounds that team, given the fact that nobody else has ever played a home field Super Bowl, and regardless of fan participation, this is quite an achievement.
Oh, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, the buzz around the city, it's been incredible. I mean, the Lightning, you know, win it, Tampa Bay Rays go to it, and, you know, we're the third team this year to play for it in the city. So the buzz has been amazing. You walk around town, you see it, you hear it. It's awesome. And, you know, what Tom has brought to this team and the leadership and obviously his ability is, it's been unbelievable to just watch him kind of make everyone around him better.
Now, you've played with some great quarterbacks in your career, Andrew Luck. I mean, Joe Flacco won a Super Bowl. You played with Carson Palmer, a season with Kyler Murray. Not to disparage any of those guys, but can you just give us kind of a thumbnail, AQ, of how different Tom Brady operates than other quarterbacks you played with?
He's so intense. I mean, football and winning kind of is everything. I mean, you watch The Last Dance on Michael Jordan. You watch all the old videos of Kobe. You know, you watch all the Tiger Woods stuff, you know, all the greats and what they bring intensity-wise and, you know, just their obsession with winning. I mean, he brings that and, you know, just watching him, you know, start with the game plan on, you know, Tuesday and watch it kind of evolve throughout the week and kind of what he sees and every day he's picking it and, you know, dissecting it and kind of the finished product obviously isn't coming forth until Sunday, a couple hours before the game. So it's awesome just to watch his approach to the game and kind of what he brings and the way he approaches practice, the way he approaches kind of everything. It's been special to watch. He brings such leadership qualities and the way he's been able to, again, like I said, make everybody else around him better. I mean, it's been unbelievable to watch.
All right, AQ, a couple of Cardinal-related questions because you are one of our favorites and you've always been so great and so candid and all that kind of stuff. Number one, you were there for year one of Cliff Kingsbury when the idea of bringing in an air raid guy kind of was appealing to a lot of people. It's clear that the Cardinals are still struggling for their kind of identity, the way they ended last season, very unbecoming. What are your thoughts on that style of offense now that you've kind of circled back and are back with BA, which is much more of a traditional play-action kind of based offense, if you will? What do you make of what they're trying to accomplish offensively here in Arizona?
You know, I honestly think it's the future. I mean, I think we're coming up kind of on an end of an era sometime in the next, I don't know, let's say 5 years, right? You're going to see the Roethlisbergers, the Bradys, the Breezes, the Rivers, you know, I'm probably missing somebody there. And that, I mean, even the Manning brothers, right? Like that style and that kind of quarterbacking is I think, going to be, you know, of yesteryear. And I think the Kyler Murrays, the Justin Herberts, the Tuas, the new wave guys, right? The Mahomes, obviously. I mean, just that spread style that the college game has gone to is slowly creeping into this league. And before long, it's kind of going to be, I think, the norm. So I guess that was a long way to answer it, but I think that offense is the future. I think, you know, whenever you wanted to get trick plays, I think a lot of these pro coaches used to go to guys like Cliff and go to some of these college air raid styles to try and get some different trick plays or different formations.
AQ Shipley of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. As we all know, I mean, your connection to Bruce Arians goes back years and years. And I'm curious, AQ, because, you know, when BA was done here in Arizona and, you know, he'd come on our show every week and we could tell at the end that, you know, there was some health issues and maybe some burnout issues that he looked like he was spent. Now that you're back with him in Tampa Bay and there's a lot more delegation going on, it seems, from BA, how much has he changed in your eyes as a head coach at this point?
Yeah, I mean, he's taken a step back. I mean, he was always, you know, so involved with the offense, so involved. And I think he's done a great job. I mean, I think that's what good head coaches do. You surround yourself with good coaches. He's done, I mean, like I said, a fantastic job of letting Byron kind of run the show. I mean, he's letting Byron control the offense. He's letting Todd control the defense. And it's been cool to watch kind of how this thing's evolved, you know, with Byron, with obviously BA stamp on it, right? And but he's you know, he's not like overstepping his boundaries, letting Byron kind of do the thing. He's not second guessing everything he's doing. And I think he feels better. I think he's allowed to kind of oversee the whole thing and take a step back and just focus on being a head coach and leading a group of men. And he's done a fantastic job of that.
All right. There's no bigger fan of Todd Bowles on the planet than I am. What do you think about this matchup between your defense and that Chiefs offense, AQ?
Todd does such a great job game planning from week to week. I mean, our defense has been unbelievable this postseason, and there's so many good players over on that side. They're playing fast. They're playing with confidence. They're playing at a high level. So I think it's going to be a great matchup, obviously. I mean, the other side is Mahomes and Kelce and so many weapons in that offense, and it's just it's going to be about that. I mean, I don't want to sit here and call it a shootout. I don't know what it's going to be. I have no idea what it's going to be, but I think it's going to be a fun game to watch.
We've seen Super Bowl matchups that have been rematches of regular season games, and the Bucks and the Chiefs got together in the regular season. Obviously, it was a good game, but I think your team, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, AQ, has changed a lot since that time. In what ways do you think the Bucks have changed since you saw the Chiefs?
Oh, it's a great question. I mean, I think you're 100% right. I think we have changed a lot. We've really got the run game going. We got two-headed monster with Fournette and Ronald Jones in the backfield. I mean, they've been running the ball great, and in the playoffs, I mean, we kind of relied on them in New Orleans and Washington and got great production out of both and throughout this whole postseason. And then it's funny, we've been able to do it with both. I mean, last week wasn't our finest run game, right? But we were able to kind of get away with it and do some things throughout the air with great defense and, you know, taking advantage of some things on the outside. So I do think we've gotten better. We've really handled the penalties. I think early on in the season we were kind of up there in penalties, and then, you know, I think we're probably towards the top of the league since maybe, I don't know, week five, week six or so. So just kind of tried to reel things in and focus a little bit more on the details, and we've hammered them out. And Tom's done a great job just kind of leading this group on offense, and defense has been doing what they've been doing all year long.
AQ Shipley of the Buccaneers, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. We spent so much time on yesterday's show going over what was the most impactful single play of the weekend, and that was the touchdown pass from Tom to Scotty Miller right before halftime. And just the sequence of events there. Initially, looks like you're going to punt, call the timeout, going to go for it. What was the reaction when you guys got the coverage that you got at that point of the half with such little time left?
Yeah, I mean, the balls it took for Byron to make that call, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, you don't get that. You walk away with no points, because I think we were in field goal range at that point, so you could have taken a long shot at a field goal and, you know, tried to secure some points, and he makes that call to, hey, listen, we're going to go big or go home, right? And you get the one-on-one on the outside. Scotty's a speed demon on the outside, and he got one-on-one coverage and just, you know, he beat his guy. A great throw by Tom. And now that's a huge point in the game, as you said. I mean, it goes from, you know, whatever, 14-10 to 21-10, and takes the air out of them. It takes the air out of the stadium. I mean, and, you know, you get that going into halftime. It's huge.
All right, my last question for you, AQ, is a guy that got Kyler Murray and saw him as during his rookie season when he was very, very unpolished, but pretty much given the keys to the bus in Arizona. He grew a little bit in year two, but I think the leadership issue, it's not exactly like the Josh Allen component in Buffalo. If you could give some advice from a veteran offensive lineman to a young Kyler Murray about leading men in the future, what would it be?
Oh, I mean, he's going to continue to grow. I mean, he's got supreme talent. I think I've
said that on your show. I've said that numerous times throughout interviews last year. I mean, he's got unbelievable talent, some of the best I've ever seen. And he's got a good group around him. I mean, I think from the really, really, really good ones that I've been around, unfortunately for me, I'm able to kind of see the best walking in action right now. And just watching his approach to the game, forget the talent, his approach to the game from a study standpoint is unbelievable. The way he approaches the game plan, understands what he does well, understands what he does best, and how he can incorporate that into the game plan of what we're trying to get accomplished as an offense, and just him being able to study and break down things throughout the week and kind of constantly evolve throughout the week, be on the same page protection-wise with the linemen, all that stuff. And if you just, the more you understand as a quarterback, the better off you're going to be, the better respect you're going to gain from the rest of the guys.
AQ Shipley, our guest. Before we let you go, I got to ask you this question, AQ, because one of the reactions here in Arizona with you guys getting to the Super Bowl is the Arizona influence from, you know, the BA era here with yourself and so many players and BA himself throughout the coaching staff. And you guys were so close in that 2015 season before you lost in the NFC Championship game. How much do you feel like those demons were exercised, and how much does that season stick with you? Because I think there's a lot of people that thought you were good enough to win it all that year.
Yeah, we had a great team. I mean, Carson had arguably one of the best quarterback seasons of all time that year. And, I mean, we great defense again. You know, we were playing at a high level and then just dropped the ball in that game. I don't know what happened, what went wrong, but it went sideways in a hurry. And, you know, I couldn't be happier for Bruce. I mean, I think, you know, as a head coach, he had so many good years in Arizona and couldn't get to the Super Bowl. And then, you know, he gets this one now, and I'm so excited for him. I mean, I think it means a lot to him getting there, first time as a head coach getting there. He obviously won a couple times as an assistant. But, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Bruce and his staff has always done a great job, whether it's in Arizona, whether it's here, whether it's in Indianapolis. And so it's just about playing your best on that day. I mean, any given Sunday, right? And, you know, we were able to fortunately do that this week.
AQ, thanks so much for spending some time with us again.
Miss you, man.
Glad you're doing well. Congratulations. Enjoy this.
Appreciate you guys.
Thanks. AQ Shipley of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Great guy.
Good to talk to him again.
He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sportsline. Coulter Infinity, luxury cars, legendary service. Visit coulterinfinity.com. Coming up next, will we have new members of the Baseball Hall of Fame later today? It's a question, and Bick's got some ideas.
I do?
And he's going to share them with you next. Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Bickley and Marotta.
Baseball Hall of Fame announcement day. There might not be any members this year's class.
It's an underwhelming class, if you will.
Well, I mean, there's enormous names on the ballot, but red flags next to all the names. And I'm looking at, there's a guy named Ryan Thibodeau who does a Hall of Fame tracker thing, and he puts out this ridiculously detailed spreadsheet. I mean, look at this, Bick.
Wow.
So of the ballots that he's been able to track that are public, which are 191 of the ballots, nobody has got the requisite 75% of the vote to get in.
Yeah.
According to his tabulations, the closest is Curt Schilling at 74.6% of the vote.
That's one vote away. I mean, that's right on the cut line, right? 75%.
Yes. This is based on 50.8% of the known of the ballots that are out there. Barry Bonds 73.6%. Roger Clemens 73.1%.
Okay. Okay, so let's come to the question of Curt Schilling. You had mentioned a report of somebody saying that there were a few voters, electors, who wanted to reach in and pull their ballots back after a series of tweets after the Capitol riots from Curt Schilling.
And I could not find anything in the aftermath of that, whether or not those voters were able to get their ballots back. There was no precedent for it, so I don't know if it was allowed, quite honestly.
Right. I have no personal love for Curt Schilling. The feeling is mutual. I've always been amazed at how somebody so opinionated is so intolerant of the opinions of others. I've never seen that dichotomy quite as I've seen it in Curt Schilling. But if you're going to talk about a Hall of Fame baseball player, I don't know how he is not a Hall of Fame baseball player. And again, don't come at me with numbers. I don't care. I'm just judging by what I think a base. I care a little bit.
Well, the numbers are good too.
Well, they are good, but I mean they're not the 300 victories. They're not the slam dunk benchmarks that I don't even know if they exist anymore.
I don't think they do. I don't know if we're ever going to see a 300 game winner again.
Yeah, that's right. So I've always believed that Curt Schilling, for what he did for the Diamondbacks, for what he did for the Red Sox, for what he did with Philadelphia, the one of the best big game pitchers in modern baseball history, definitely a Hall of Famer. But if there is ever a guy that rubbed people the wrong way, this guy probably exceeds Barry Bonds, except Barry Bonds' transgressions were much more serious. Well, they were affecting the competitive integrity of the game.
You just hit the nail on the head. It's, you know, Curt Schilling, yeah, he rubs people the wrong way. Very divisive figure. But this is the Baseball Hall of Fame. This is not the I agree with everybody's opinions Hall of Fame.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure you came across this same quote today. Jeff Passan is one of the baseball writers that I really, really respect. I think he's highly intelligent. And he gave up his Hall of Fame vote in 2017 because of a letter that Joe Morgan, a recently passed Hall of Famer, asked voters not to elect steroid users to what he called the most sacred place in baseball. And Jeff Passan's response to that was, if by sacred place the hall means one in which racists, wife beaters, drunks, gamblers, and purveyors of manifold moral turpitude otherwise are celebrated, well, Cooperstown is a shining beacon of divinity set upon a hill of hypocrisy.
Yeah.
If we're going to go in and review everybody's resume as a human being, there's a lot of guys that are getting removed. So I believe from a baseball standpoint, Curt Schilling is a Hall of Famer, and I felt that for years.
Mm-hmm.
I've also, you know, even though their transgressions were against baseball, guys like Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds are two of the best to ever do it.
Are you surprised that they're inching so close to getting in after just the absolute, like, hate thrown at them in the few years after they retired?
I feel like among some voters, there's a softening there too. Like, okay, they didn't get in early. We've made them wait. We've made them twist in the wind a little bit. But how do you ignore the contributions? And what I can't get past is during their playing careers, they were accused of these things, and they were still allowed to play the game.
Yeah,
they were still allowed to affect wins and losses. They were still allowed to compile statistics. That's what I can't get past.
Yeah, I think that's an important distinction to make. I think Barry Bonds, you extrapolate, the biggest shame about him is he was already a Hall of Fame baseball player or on a Hall of Fame trajectory before he started doing this stuff. And it was the jealousy of the Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire home run chase of 98 that kind of triggered that. You look at Roger Clemens, I'm sure you could make a very similar statement about that. My thinking was, if you wanted to, as the Hall of Fame, really re-inject some life into everything, you induct, and they don't do this, but could you imagine bringing in Curt Schilling, Barry Bonds, and Roger Clemens in the same class and just stacking their speeches on top of each other and just make it, you know, the black hat summer in Cooperstown?
That's the hat they go in. There's always that debate.
Yeah.
What cap are you going to wear on your bus?
On.
Yeah, it's just a plain black cap.
That's cowboy hat.
Yeah. Right, that's what you do. That's exactly what you do.
Well, think about also, if there's ever a year to do it, potentially a year where there wouldn't be the big hoopla on fans.
Ban the ban on Pete Rose. Let him in. Do all of that. That would be quite a party. That'd be quite a scene in Cooper. It would be the most.
I mean, it'd have to be done virtually because, you know.
Well, true. Yeah. Well, you would hope by. Yeah, well, that is true. When is inductions? When do they do this?
Usually in July, middle of summer, or excuse me, August. I believe it's
okay.
August.
All right.
And maybe things will be different by then. But last year's class,
I mean,
Derek Jeter hasn't made his Hall of Fame speech yet, and it's still on hold. They didn't do anything virtually this past summer.
It'd be interesting. It's always interesting that baseball is the only one where you see some years nobody gets in.
Yeah, and it's happened before. Also, I came across one writer who there was a long article. I think it was Joe Posnanski. Maybe I'm speaking out of school, but LaTroy Hawkins has one vote for the Hall of Fame that's been tracked by Ryan Thibodeau. And the writer wrote about the fact that the person that he admired the most in terms of being a clubhouse leader and a great teammate, as you know, in addition to being a great player, was Hal McCray. And Hal McCray got like one or no votes for the Hall of Fame. And the writer said, that's a crime. If this ever pops up again and I feel this way about a player, I'm going to cast a Hall of Fame vote. So he cast a Hall of Fame vote for LaTroy Hawkins.
Is that
he was
right?
an under 500 pitcher, but just respected him immensely for the way he carried himself as a professional and a baseball player. And once upon a time, I might have said, you know, that's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel that way anymore.
Really? Yeah, because you see that a lot. You see a lot of hometown writers giving the guy a random vote that influences nothing, but it's a little nod of respect. Thank you, bro.
Yeah.
Thank you for all that information. You are a Hall of Famer to me.
Which, it's not affecting induction into the actual museum.
No, I know.
So it's a nice little tip of the cap.
Yeah, it is. It is, unless the votes could be cast elsewhere. And if you are saying that they wouldn't have been, then no harm, no foul.
Yeah, and the Baseball Hall of Fame hasn't said, hey, you with your vote, you can't conduct yourself that way.
Okay,
you can't
that's true.
You do have the freedom as a voter to vote how you will. I'm curious to see.
So am I. It's going to come down, 3 o'clock today?
I believe so. If any of three of those guys get in, because if they do... If even one of them gets in, there's going to be a faction of people that have a real big problem with it.
With you people.
Schilling has been close for a while. There was a time where I never, ever thought Barry Bonds or Clemens would get in. That I thought absolutely the people from that era, because they were so derided for ruining baseball, would ever get in.
Schilling was 5% short last year, 70%. Clemens was at 61 last year. And Bonds was at 60.7.
Yeah.
So they've all made a leap this year.
Okay, listen, if people have had a problem, shut up, Jared. People have had a problem, that was not planned. If people had a problem with Curt Schilling for his inflammatory political rhetoric, and forgive me for not knowing this, I don't follow him actively. Could just a single tweet about the Capitol riots change what it is he's doing? I suppose I should know what tweet's in question here before I talk about it.
I'm not very well schooled on what he wrote.
Let me rephrase it by saying that to me is a place that media should not go. I know it's very hard for some people because Curt Schilling is very anti-media to the point where he's publicly like pictures of those awful death to the media T-shirts, that kind of stuff.
Either way, we'll have reaction on tomorrow's edition of Bickley and Murata.
Like
we also have some social studies coming up next with Sarah Cazell. It's Bickley and Murata live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.